Hello and welcome to the OTP, the one true podcast for fanfiction readers, writers, and lovers. I am your usual host and mod, Enthusiasm Girl. Now, this episode is about something that's become a definite theme of our show, in part because it is an enormous part of what fanfiction is, and that's romance. In the past, we've talked about shipping as a whole and why it is so central to the fanfiction community in an episode on OTPs. We've delved into erotica and the sexier, maybe a bit steamier side of things in an episode on fanfiction as pornography. However, now we're going to get into the very specific romantic tropes that are really common in fic. From the early stages when a couple maybe doesn't even realize that they're in love yet, through to the courting stage and into actual dating, and then to marriage and domestic life and beyond, all kinds of different romantic tropes have made their way from Harlequin romance novels and from romantic comedies and just from the fanish hive mind into fic. So contributors Tia and Lexi join me and we dive deep into them, we dissect them, we share our favorites. It's a very fun conversation. So a brief note though that Lexi did drop off the call later on, so you won't hear her providing a fic rec or final thoughts. But other than that, let's dive right in. So I have Lexi here and I have Tia, and we are talking today about romantic trope fic. So romantic tropes that appear in fan fiction. For those of you who are not, you know, who are listening, who are maybe not as savvy in fandom, maybe we should define what a trope is. Just because I've used that term recently, assuming people knew what it meant, and then I've had people be like, huh? What's a trope? So do we want to kind of try to explain that? Lexi, what in your world, like, what's a trope mean?
A trope is just sort of like a default cookie cutter kind of formula that I associate with, or that it can be associated with certain plot lines, just a formulaic plot line that you add this scenario plus this scenario equals, in this case, a blossom of romance. Right. And it can be applied to pretty much any story ever.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, if you're interested in tropes, there's TV Tropes, which is a big fandom site, which kind of tries to name and describe just every trope imaginable. So every kind of cliche that's used in fiction, every kind of storytelling building block, because that makes them sound kind of bad, but they're not. They're just the building blocks of stories, right? And the first page of TV Tropes says that Merriam-Webster gives the definition of trope as a figure of speech, and in storytelling, a trope is just that. It's a conceptual figure of speech, a storytelling shorthand for a concept that the audience will recognize and understand instantly. It's a convention. So a plot trick, a setup, a narrative structure, a character type, it lists a bunch of them there. So if you want to know more about tropes because we're talking about them, this whole podcast really is about tropes a lot of the time, but you can go to TV Tropes, and I just want to get that out of the way so that we're all on the same page. You never know with some of this terminology if everybody knows it or not. So we're talking about romantic tropes in particular. So Tia, when I asked you to do this episode and it was going to be on romantic tropes, what were the first things that came to your mind?
The first couple of things that came to my mind were fairly specific. So one was about the kind of fake dating or pretending to be having to be a relationship for some reason, and stuff that's related to soulmates. Because to me, a romantic trope is something that it's a plot device or a structure where it's either leading towards a relationship or some kind of romance. Sometimes it's for people who are already in that, but the stuff I tend to read tends to be the setup for a new relationship.
Right. And a lot of these tropes that are romantic, I mean, you could kind of pull them straight out of a romantic comedy. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or I know, like a cookie cutter romance novel.
Yeah, I mean, there was a podcast I like called Stuff Mom Never Told You, and I was listening to it recently, and they were doing a whole series, because it's a feminist podcast, and they were doing a series on romantic comedies. And as they ticked through all of the things that make a romantic comedy and all of the standard stuff, I was like, oh, that's fic. That's fic. That's fic. All these tropes, it's like you're taking these characters, and sometimes that's why romantic trope fic can just get wildly out of character very quickly, because you're just taking these characters and you're sticking them in a romantic comedy in a lot of ways, only without certain tropes that you can't write, like, you know, musical numbers. So why are romantic tropes so popular in fanfiction? Because they are a dominant genre. We already did an episode of the show on OTPs and shipping, where we kind of covered some of this ground, but we were more talking about specific ships and why people ship. But why write romantic fic in general? Lexi, what do you think about that?
Well, in many cases, especially with shipping, there's a lot of non-canonical romances that people want to see, and writing within the context of a romantic trope could help you easily get to characters that aren't written as canonically getting together. So it's a nice way to explore, like, you know, there's no romantic comedy about person X and person Y, so why not make one happen on your own?
I wanted to ask you, Lexi, because you were in our erotica episode also, and
yes,
we talked about shipping. And initially when I approached this topic, I wasn't sure how different it would be. But then I thought about it and I realized that, you know, shipping is its own thing. Mm-hmm. Writing romance fic, though, is like a subset of shipping. And it's very, very different from the erotica side, I feel like, of shipping. Like, there's usually some crossover, but a lot of the times it's very different types of fans who are attracted to the heavy romance versus like the heavy sexual aspect of it.
Sure.
So as somebody who likes both, how big do you think that gulf is between the people who come for the sex and the people who come for the fluff and the romance?
Well, I mean, there's definitely, I feel, for me, there's a ton of overlap, because I like, my kind of favorite fics are ones that encompass both the development of the relationship, whether it's going from brand new to, or, you know, not at all to a relationship, or it's already an established relationship. I like stuff, fics that explore the nature of the relationship, the romantic relationship between the two characters, and I also like the erotica. So I know there's a ton of overlap, but there's also people that'll write fic that's rated like G or T, and it's very fluffy and sweet, and there's no, you know, sometimes there's not even any kissing, and it's just more about the sweetness of the conversations and body language. So there's definitely people that like one, you know, just romance, people that like just erotica, but I think there's a pretty big overlap in between.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think it depends on the kind of erotica writer too, because
definitely.
I know a couple people who like either their issue with romance fic is that they come for really in character stuff. And so then
right.
A lot of the romance stuff gives them an issue because it's just too fluffy, especially if you're coming from a fandom that is itself kind of dark, like Hannibal or
right.
Daredevil. Some people come in and they're like, oh my God, why would I want to read a fic about these two characters just kissing and being happy? Like, that's not the show or
exactly.
The story. And then you also have another subset who, if you're into kink, it's sometimes it's a little harder to reconcile being a person who likes like non-con or likes dub-con or likes kink or likes BDSM or whatever, and coming in and then seeing all these fluffy fics where people make out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tia, my question for you is, do you think that there's an age gap in terms of who's writing romance fic versus isn't? Do you think it's a young person's thing? Do you think it's an older person's thing? Do you think it's an across the board, every demographic is writing it thing?
I'd probably be inclined, I'm not sure about writing it, but I'm inclined to say reading it's very broad. So the people I get fic recs from include a friend of mine. So I'm in my early 20s, my friend's in her early 30s. The other person I get fic recs from is my mum, who's in her 50s, which, by the way, is eternally weird. But so she tends to go for the very fluffy stuff. I mean, I'm fairly certain there is other stuff she's reading, but we are not sharing that with each other. But so that, you know, I mean, I choose stuff that does range from the really fluffy through to the really sort of erotic stuff. But I think there's enough people who, it kind of depends on the mood you're in, I find, for a lot of people. Like, if you're in a, you know, if you're having one of those days where you just want someone to be happy and loving, and then that's what you're going to look for. If you're kind of, you know, if you're looking for something more angry, or you're looking for something hot, then it kind of depends on the mood. I think there's going to be a point at which some sort of maybe early teens are going to be either looking for fluff because that's what they're used to seeing, and they haven't kind of got to the seeing the harder stuff, as it were, yet. But also there's going to be people, I remember being about, you know, 15 and finding the erotica and thinking it was all very exciting. Not because I was particularly interested in it as erotica, but because I was 15.
Yeah, there's a taboo yeah. element to it.
Yeah, definitely.
The reason I asked is because, like, I asked about age just because a lot of the romantic trope fic, it can also be, and I don't want to sound like an old cynic here, but it can also be a little naive, right? It can also be very much about the idea of true love, and about, you know, the idea that losing your virginity is amazing and wonderful, and sex is lovemaking, and it'll rock your world, and it's all about the power of true love overcoming all. It's got, like, fairy tale aspects to it. Mm-hmm. That I just wondered if you guys got a vibe like that was a younger fandom thing for that reason. But I think older people, like, I still love reading it.
I think you get a reality check in it by that it's written by someone who has a bit more experience. So in both kind of erotica and in very romantic stuff, in the romantic stuff you get the kind of, actually, relationships are difficult. We can still be lovely and fluffy and this is still really cute, but being in a relationship is hard. And then in the erotica you kind of similarly get the kind of, yes, this is still gonna, it's still escapist fantasy. But there's also an awareness of what, you know, consent is, and actually that's going to hurt if you do it like that.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Well, yeah, for sure.
And not as often as there should be for a lot of people.
Well, yeah.
All right, so let's talk about how that love of romance tropes that fandom has manifests itself in fic. How do you know when you come into fic, oh, I'm reading romance fic, right? What kind of tags are we looking at? What kind of impacts on the fandom? I mean, you look at how popular the fluff tag is on AO3. We did the whole episode early on Hurt Comfort, and I think fluff is the only tag that's really above Hurt Comfort, where across fandoms, you're always going to find a heavy concentration of fluff. It does not matter the fandom. It does not matter if it's a fluffy fandom like Gilmore Girls, where that's what the source material is. It doesn't matter if it's Daredevil, where when you actually watch the show, you're like, oh, this is not fluffy. I watched season 2 of Daredevil, and, like, because I had been living in fic world for about a year between seasons. When I watched it, there was the opening scene where Matt Murdock is Daredevil, and he's just kicking ass and taking names on the street. And I literally turned to my friend, and I was like, oh, thank God I missed this. And he was like, what, you missed the show? And I was like, no, I miss him actually being Daredevil, because in most fics, that's just a thing he does off story. He comes in Foggy's window and makes out with Foggy, and it's one line of like, oh, he punched a mugger. because all this fluff fic doesn't really necessarily always, like, live in the deep reality of the tone of the show, right?
No, like, so, never.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter what fandom you're in. It can be the most disgusting, horrific, insanely dark fandom full of murderers, or it can be It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I went and was in that for a little while. It's got some fluff going on, which you would think, these are horrible people, how could you do that? But people do it. And even the fluffiest fluffy fandoms also still have a lot of fluff, obviously. So it's popular, right? And a lot of romance fic is intertwined with fluff. You're talking about the same thing usually, right? Because of how many people ship. For you guys, how does that manifest in the fandoms that you're in, this love of romantic trope fic? And Lexi, we'll start with you, because I know you're in some darker fandoms too.
Yeah, most of my fandoms are fandoms full of murderers, so it's definitely, it's more of a, it's kind of, I feel like it's an amazing feat when I read a fluffy fic that manages to pull it off with minimal out-of-character characterization. Because the characters obviously aren't only super evil. Well, sometimes they're only super evil, but it's just interesting to see how certain people perceive them, how the characters, like, how Hannibal might be loving, like a loving person, and showing it in a way that isn't, you know, framing Will Graham for murder, for example. So it's very interesting to see how other people characterize these spookier characters as in a fluffy way. And sometimes, a lot of times, it really works. And you're like, wow, you know, you forget you're reading about serial killers. And it's very interesting. And one of my other big fandoms, another big ship of mine is Kylo Ren and General Hux and Star Wars. Not great guys, not really good. General Hux is, all about genocide and the First Order, and Kylo Ren is trying to eschew any feelings of, you know, lightness and any inclinations to be like a human guy, and he's just trying to be evil. So when these two are being written as, you know, whether or not it's an AU or within the Star Wars universe, as being like showing love for each other, it's interesting. It deepens the characters for me.
Yeah, I mean, I always am so fascinated by how fans are able to do that, right? To bring whatever genres they want to write into something, no matter if it seems like it would initially fit or not. We'll talk about wobification a little bit later, and we'll talk about some of the issues, because there are issues, obviously, with romance tropes. And I know there might even be some people listening, because this is just a thing, unfortunately, where they heard you say General Hux and Kylo Ren, and they're like, oh, no!
Oh, yeah, I have a lot to say about the problems in wobification, because, that's a big discussion in the darker fandoms especially.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I just wanted to get a vibe from you, because there are people who are successfully writing fluff in fandoms, where you would not expect it to be successfully written, and that's part of the interesting thing to me about the presence of these romance tropes. Tia, what about you and your fandoms that you're in? How does this love of romance tropes kind of manifest itself, and what impact does it have on the fandoms you're in?
For me, it tends to be, I mean, when I go looking for it, it tends to be the tropes that put the characters in a scenario they wouldn't necessarily be in, which tends to kind of lead to a greater intimacy of any kind. So they kind of begin to see each other in a different light. Leaving aside soulmate picks, which are another absolute fave, but stuff like fake dating or having to go undercover as a couple, that puts the characters in the ship. They may at this point hate each other. They might just not get along. They have, you know, rough edges, and they rub up against each other wrong. And it just kind of puts them in a scenario where they have to be affectionate to each other. And actually suddenly they go, hang on, this is not a terrible person. So, yeah, that tends to be the kind of stuff I'm looking for. It tends to be that not that they are massively different, it's just that they tend to be seeing each other in a way they hadn't before.
Yeah, I have a thing for opposite attracts ships. And they tend to attract so much romantic trope fic. So, So what kind of tags are we thinking about? I mentioned that as well, but like, let's go through kind of some of the most common general tags that you'll see them used in. For me, a lot of AUs, automatically if I see them, I lump those into the romantic trope fic category, right? So you mentioned soulmate AUs, right? So like soulmate, soulmark, soulbond AUs. I dare anybody to find a non-romantic, well, I shouldn't say that because I've probably read a couple, but it's rare to find non-romantic soulmate, soulmark, or soulbond AUs. I have read some, actually, where the person is soulbound to somebody awful.
Yeah.
But it's very rare.
And come back when we get to the Rex, but there are some but somewhere you don't necessarily get together with the person who is your soulmate in some way. And what happens as a result. And that actually makes for some of the more interesting stuff in that trope. But it's less almost a use of that trope, but more how can we turn this on its head?
Yeah, it's really more like going around the trope than kind of embracing it head on. There are soul bonded soulmate fics where like there are platonic soulmates in that universe, which I think is lovely. But yeah, I mean that's a case of where you read it, and if you came in for a soulmate fic, you might even at the end of the fic be like, I'm really disappointed because I wanted a soulmate fic, and my assumption is that it's this. I find alternate first meeting AUs, that's almost always used for romance purposes.
Yeah.
Yeah, can we turn these people who hate each other into a meet cute or vice versa?
Well, or can we turn these people who had a cute enough meet in the story into like having an even more cuter meeting?
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, alternate first meeting AUs are fun for that reason, because you get to kind of rewrite the history of the couple. And for some reason, and this is something I think if you're not in fan fiction, you wouldn't understand necessarily, like all of the kind of really mundane AUs, like the ones that take a superhero universe or take a science fiction fantasy universe and they kind of strip it and turn it into just something really mundane. So like a coffee shop AU, a butcher shop AU, a flower store AU. Mm-hmm. If I encounter those, I usually am thinking to myself, this is romance fic.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. As you say about Flower Shop and the one that came to mind just then, I was involved with Bilbo Baggins running. I can't remember if he was the baker and Thorin was the florist, but it was something like that. And it was absurd and wonderful and so adorable, but slightly off character, I think. But
Lexi, would you agree that most of those kind of more mundane AUs are, they're almost always for the purposes of romance?
Yes, definitely. Because, you know, they're mundane situations and contexts we can all identify, and they're not necessarily anywhere that the characters would have ever canonically be. Like, Bilbo and Thorin probably wouldn't be walking into a Middle-earth coffee shop at any point in Lord of the Rings or Hobbit universe, but you know, it's setting, taking these characters out of their canonical context, which might be a horrifying universe, and putting them in a regular space, you know, a modern day maybe space, and allowing them their relationship to, you know, blossom and bloom from there.
Why do you think that those became so exclusively about romance, though? Because you could have a coffee shop AU where it's just like, let's let these characters be these characters. It's a little strange to me that, you know, when you say those kinds of AUs, people immediately assume it's romantic. Why do you think that that kind of fell into that?
It's the fandom version, like we were saying, of a romantic comedy or I'm not quite sure what the North American equivalent is. Here would be like a Mills and Boone novel. It's like a Harlequin romance.
Yes.
It's that kind of, you know, it's the plot is conceivable enough, and the point is that we want to read this and enjoy people getting together. And it is really the fandom equivalent of that, I think. And I think it's also because as soon as people start doing that a lot, then you kind of get to the point where actually, if you write a coffee shop AU without a romance in it, are people going to be disappointed by that now?
Yeah, and also, I mean, you have to still have conflict. If you take all the other, I think when you're writing gen fic or when you're writing non-romantic fic, like, the conflicts come from the universe, right?
Yeah.
That the characters are in. The conflicts are the same ones they have in the series, right? So if you take all those things away and strip them away for a coffee shop AU, what are you left with, right? I was also going to say the other one that kind of you can usually assume it's going to be a romance fic, even though sometimes it's not, is a 5+1 fic, right? So 5 times X happened and then 1 time Y happened instead. I find that most of the time those are romances. Tia, do you find that?
Yeah, I would probably tend to agree. It's very relationship focused, but I don't know if it's always romantic relationship focused. I think the majority probably are, but there's a fair subset that are very much about, you know, friendship. Mm-hmm. and five times that person had a terrible relationship with somebody, and one time his friend just got it, you know. That kind of thing. But I still think, I'd say it's probably like 75% romantic.
Mm-hmm. Lexi, what do you think? Do you think that the 5+1s are more often romantic?
The ones I've read usually are, and the first five times I found, usually the first five of the five things are times when the characters wanted to do a certain thing, or one of the characters wanted to express themselves in a certain way and ended up failing. Whether or not it was, you know, the end of the world is a different story, but, and then the one time that, you know, the one time at the end is when the characters succeed in completing their interaction, or the one character succeeds in expressing themselves to the other one. So it's just, those are interesting to me because they really, you know, you can see how the fans want, you know, to explore a character trying to express themselves in ways that they wouldn't have canonically. But I'm also, again, coming from a lot of horror fandoms, so those are always, I'm just always fascinated by those. Like, look at these guys.
I've written one 5+1 fic, and what happened to it happened to a lot of the fics that I've written, which is, like, some genres and some types of fic I'll write, and they'll just be friendship fic, and it will seem like it's just friendship, because I only write gen fic, usually, right? And then so there are some genres of fic that when I go to write them as a gen fic, I end up feeling like, man, if I'd have just stuck a kiss in there, that would have been a romance fic. That's all it needed, because it was basically, I wrote it like a romance fic. And my 5+1 fic that I wrote was like that, where I got to the end and I was like, well, if that's, you could ship it and they just don't kiss in it. Like, it's a romance fic specifically. It has that vibe more than just these are friends. So
I think there's a thing there about where the overlap is between a very strong platonic bond and a romance anyway, which a lot of people, I think, find really hard to define. I know I do. My absolute best friend in all the world, the amount of people who still think we must be together somehow. And I'm like, no, definitely not. But I think, particularly in fic, and it comes out in a lot of other ways in fic as well, about the difficulty with writing a friendship when other people ship it or whatever else. But I think I can see where the problem lies.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before on the show, but I'm asexual. So for me, I'm never looking to write sex or romance, but I also am not aromantic. And so I always kind of write stuff that's like, I'm aware that there are people who ship this, and I'm aware that there are people who necessarily maybe don't want to ship it, but you can take it and you can read it kind of however you want. I'm a big fan of like queer platonic relationships, or relationships where you can read into it either thing. Right, where they're that deep. And I find that there are certain genres where that's just easier to fall into.
Yeah, and it's probably more challenging, or I would find it to be more challenging to write something that would explore the bonds between two characters platonically. That's not necessarily something romantic or sexual. That's very challenging because it's almost, you know, at the end of a 5+1, like, it could just end with a kiss or whatever. So to end it without that is, like, that's an entirely, I mean, not entirely different, but it's a new writing challenge for sure, and definitely interesting to read.
So let's talk about the tropes. Let's talk about the actual types of tropes that we see in a lot of these romance fics. TV Tropes has a list, and I will link to this in the show notes. And that's kind of what we're building off of, but I've kind of reordered it a little bit here to touch on only the ones that really appear in fan fiction, because some don't. But you have, first off, kind of tropes that are related to attraction. So they're not necessarily about two people hooking up. They're just about exploring the idea that these two people have an early attraction to one another, and what are they going to do about it, right? And that can sometimes skip over all the dating and courtship. It's not about that. It's about these two people are going to have sex, or these two people are going to, at the end of the fic, just realize they like each other, right? And the ones I have listed here that we'll talk about are, there are fics about bathing. two characters are bathing. There are huddling for warmth fix, right? Or fix where the characters are for some reason forced into a space or forced into a bed.
Yep.
And you are smiling, Lexi. You enjoy those, I assume.
I do. I like, I've written bathing fix and forced into the same bed fix. And those are just a way of getting two fools to acknowledge that they love each other, and admit it to one another. And it's, those are fun to write.
The forced into sharing a bed or whatever is brilliant because it kind of puts them in a situation where you would have a lot more literal physical distance between them. My favorite thing about that, it is a trope that has been used in genuine canons. The first time that Batman and Superman met in the comics, in their first annual together, there is a mess up on a cruise ship and they have to share a bed.
That's awesome.
DC Comics did it first, so it's it is right there. And it's great, it's great because suddenly it's the, oh, we've woken up spooning. Well, this is awkward.
Yeah, and usually the thing is, the difference between fan fiction and actual canon, because it happens a lot in actual canon too, is in actual canon, it usually ends up with them waking up and being like, well, this is awkward, your boner's on my ass or something, or like, this is really awkward. And in fan fiction, the phrase, this is awkward, then turns into, yeah, but I kind of like it.
Let's do something about it.
I mean, there are so many missing scenes from various canons. Anytime one of those scenes comes up in a canon and it kind of cuts away after, oh, this is awkward, and then they get up, there are always those missing scenes or those AUs where, like, no, they didn't just get up. fans love those types of things, and they're brilliant. And they do appear in a lot of canons, actually. And sometimes those can be not fluff, right? A lot of the times, some of these tropes, you do tend to find them be used more for hurt comfort, right? So there are a lot of these types of fics where the reason that they have to force kind of each other into a space is a hurt comfort thing, like they're trapped or something's happened, one of them is really sick, right? You had a lot of pining fics when it comes to the stage of a relationship that's attraction. Daredevil, again, coming up my fandom, is notorious for pining fix, because you see these two characters who've known each other for 10 years at the start of the show. So if you're going to ship them, you can't ignore the fact that either you're rewriting the canon, they've been together this whole time, or more often than not, one of them has to have spent 10 years pining for the other, period. That's just how you get them together in Daredevil fandom. And so the pining fic, where you're going through the entire show from the lens of one of them is just hopelessly in love with the other, or they both are and they just haven't ever said it, you dummies.
And I tend to find that with most ships, there tends to be one character who is more likely to be the piner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, Daredevil, for example, it's very frequently Foggy.
You know what, though? That is a thing among fans, because I know Daredevil fans who have said they have no issue with pining fix where Foggy is the piner, but the problem is there's probably an equal number written where Matt is the piner, and there are a lot of people who just find that wildly OOC to begin with, right? But a lot of fans do headcanon because Matt is the one who is less capable of demonstrating his emotions genuinely. That they make Matt the one who's absolutely pining and who Foggy mistakes for straight, but he's never been straight and he's never been able to say it to Foggy, right? So there are people who do that, but at the same time, I think there are more Daredevil fans who object to that characterization than if you make it Foggy who's doing the pining. Because I think you're right. I think there's usually one person who character-wise just seems like they would be the piner more.
I think it's also a thing about emotional self-awareness. Like, if your character is emotionally self-aware, they are going to acknowledge that they really are in love with or really fancy this person. Whereas if they're emotionally not self-aware enough, like Matt, for example, you kind of get that they just kind of go, well, it's my friend.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody who characterizes Foggy as not being aware that he's in love with Matt from, like, the moment he meets him.
Conversely, it can be it can be interesting, I don't want to say more interesting, but it's also interesting to read the OOC person, character pining for the other person, because even if they are, you know, canonically emotionally closed off, it's, you can get this sort of internal monologue that, you know, written by a fan for how they might, you know, be processing their own pining, their own feelings, even if they're not outwardly showing it or they don't know how to express it outwardly.
Yeah, unrequited pining just hurts.
Yeah, that's a lot of pain.
Yeah. You also, in the attraction stage, have sometimes amnesia fix, which I quite enjoy, which is one or the other character gets amnesia, and because they have amnesia, they are more outwardly in love with this person, and it reveals inner stuff because they don't remember who they were. That those are always interesting to me. There's a lot of Avengers fix with Steve or Tony where one of them gets amnesia, and that happens for some reason.
There's something there about, in that kind of being more honest because you don't quite know who you are. There's a lot of stuff where people have, especially in fandoms where there's people might get injured. Of, you know, I am currently full of so much medication, I am high as a kite.
Oh, yeah.
And now my mouth just opens and says things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that tends to work quite well in terms of it creates a communication channel that just didn't really happen before.
I've got a bingo I'm participating in right now, and one of my bingo card options is truth serum / truth telling fic.
Yeah.
You also have scenarios, and we touched on it when we touched on forced bed or space sharing, but where the characters are just isolated or trapped together. So the plane crashes and they're in the wilderness together and they have to survive. And you have desert island fix and cave fix. And a fic I didn't know was a thing. And me and my other Canadian friend had quite the conversation about it because the trope is called Canadian Shack.
Yep.
And we were just like, because she lives in Alberta and I live in Southern Ontario. And we're like, Canadian Shack is just offensive to Canadians. Because almost none of us live in shacks. Like, it's just, it's...
I think Canada, it's essentially cabin in the woods idea.
Yeah, it should be called, like, Alaskan shack or something. Or, like, North Canadian shack. Because I was just like, oh, what are people picturing when they picture Canada when you have a trope called Canadian shack? It's so funny.
I like that. I've never heard of the Canadian shack, and now I think I have some research to do.
We all sit in our little shacks and go ice fishing and have rifles. Yeah.
Of course. Naturally.
And there are so many conveniently abandoned shacks that people can end up sleeping in overnight when they are lost.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You always find a cabin, right? You always find a cabin if you hike long enough.
Yep.
Because obviously you find a cabin before you find, I don't know, a village.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Yeah, that's a popular one in Walking Dead fandom, too. There's always, oh, we can't go back. We don't want to be in the dark with all the zombies. We better stay in this conveniently located, fully furnished cabin.
Yep. I like Avengers fandom sometimes subverts that trope, because if you're writing a fic about Tony, he can just, like, walk to the nearest property that he mysteriously owns. Like, I'm a billionaire. I have a cabin this way.
Well, see, it works really well with... So I'm into quite a lot of fandoms that are related to, like, spies and secret agents and stuff. And it is literally what they do in canon often, is find a convenient place to hole up for a while and wait out whatever it is.
Yeah, they have safe houses.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not even safe houses. It's just, oh, look, here is a cave. That'll do. So, you know, you find that in canon and then you're like, well, let me just fill in the gaps while you're here.
Breaking and entering for love.
Oh, yeah.
Another one you see commonly in the we are discovering our attraction for each other kind of stage of a romance fic is body swap.
Oh, yeah.
I quite enjoy a good body swap fic.
I read a really good one the other day, which, so I was reading Star Trek fic, mostly because I saw Beyond the other day, and we'll happily discuss that at length for anybody who wishes to.
Oh, yes.
But basically it was Kirk and McCoy are already together, and then transporter accident, because transporter accidents do wonderful things even in canon.
They do.
Causes a swap between Kirk and Spock, and they swap bodies.
I think body swap is one where
Some canons have a lot of body swap because body swap is practically canon. So, like, Star Trek is one of them. Harry Potter, very easy to write a body swap fic. Avengers fandom, very easy to write a body swap fic. If you show me a Glee body swap fic, I will be very, very amused.
Like, you've basically got to add something new to the universe that doesn't exist already. Like, yeah. In most of those universes, there's already aliens or magic or weird science or something.
Most of them have canon body swap stuff, too, or stuff that borders. Mm. So, like, Avengers has Loki, who can shapeshift, you know? And Star Trek has transporter accidents, and Harry Potter has characters disguising themselves via magic as other characters. So, I mean, most of them are kind of halfway there.
And the similar things with, like, Stargate fandom has a wonderful habit of doing, we found a piece of technology from an alien on a planet, and we're not quite sure what it does, let's touch it. Which has a variety of results, including pregnancy, body swaps, you name it.
Yes.
Yep. Star Trek. Ditto for Star Wars.
Yep, and Star Trek had a canon M-Preg episode.
Really?
Oh, it did. Enterprise, the worst of the Star Treks, according to most fans, but my favorite had a canon M-Preg episode that had arm nipples.
Okay.
Yes, go watch it. It is an Enterprise episode. It is about the third or fourth episode of the show, period. Like, they didn't just go there. They went there after, like, the pilot, and then you hit M-Preg episode.
Well, go big or go home.
And it's dubious consent M-Preg. Yay.
Wow, looks like I might be joining the Star Trek fandom.
Yes. Oh, please do. When you said Star Trek Beyond, I was tempted to be like, bones! Star Trek fandom's great. I'm going to dive into that one because I did like the first
this
two
one
movies,
I was but... reading. Yeah, this one I was reading was a perfect, like, OT3, you know, Spock and Kirk going, well, we can be logical about this. We can do what we like with each other's bodies as long as it happens. Right? Yeah, sure, whatever.
I feel like Beyond is even closer than the original series ever got to canon OT3. Like, come on. Just, oh, dudes. Oh. I was in Enterprise fandom, so that's why I joke that it is by and large regarded as the cruddiest of the Star Treks. But it's the only one that's still canon in the movie universes. Yay.
Well, exactly. But there's a lot of that kind of what it's putting people in a situation they wouldn't be in. Well, they might be in. They could conceivably be in canon, but they haven't experienced. And it's putting them in such a way that means that they are emotionally more intimate than before.
Right. And the final one in the attraction kind of stage of a romance trope pick is we also mentioned alternate first meeting, AUs. There's lots of them. Actually, one thing I wish would be more of a thing, and it's not, is like a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles AU. I think I've read one ever in any fandom where it's the due date Planes, Trains, and Automobiles thing where the two people get kicked off of a plane together and they have to like journey across the country to get to their respective homes because they can't stay on the plane and they were strangers. I love
that. I have not come across that, but it sounds brilliant.
I mean, those whole types of movies are basically first meeting AUs for friends. But if you apply them to a romance, they would be delightful. So
yeah, not interested in that.
So then we move into flirting and courtship type of tropes, which are kind of more less tropes that deal with the we are attracted to each other, we're going to hook up stage. They deal with the various ways people try to get dates or sex or marriage. So these are not two people don't know they're attracted to each other. These are fics in which they've either realized that they're attracted to each other or it's the stage of them dating or courting each other or, well, not dating, but flirting with each other and courting each other now that they're aware that they like each other, which results in all kinds of misunderstandings. And this is tropes like... Two other characters scheme to hook two people up. So in ensembles with big casts like Avengers or Star Trek, you know, it would be a fic where Uhura and Chekhov are like, boy, Kirk and Spock just need to get over each other. It's affecting the health of everybody on the ship. So we're going to scheme to put them in scenarios where they're together because we know that they love each other, right?
Yeah.
And courting fic would be where one character just does everything that they can to woo the other. And the other is either oblivious or the other just keeps saying no for whatever reason. And this is kind of also where mistaken identity and identity porn come into play.
Yeah. So for me, identity porn is basically when people have usually multiple identities by which they are known, and there's some kind of confusion, or you like two versions of the identity meet. So I was saying to you guys before that I've recently been reading Batman Superman. So you get, you know, the meeting as the superheroes, and then you get the meeting as Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent, or you get Clark meets Batman and all that kind of thing, and they can't tell each other. And there's all this, you know, there's a bit of a, I feel like I should tell you. There's a TV trope called The Masquerade Will Kill Your Dating Life. You know, how do you not tell them what's going on? How do you lie to them? And then there's the, oh, it was you the whole time. We've already met each other. It's going around in circles about who you are.
So identity porn is something, it doesn't have to have porn, but it's called that anyway. Because a lot of people get off on it. it's common actually in canon. So like Superman and Lois Lane's relationship is all identity porn, right? She's in love with Superman. She doesn't give Clark Kent the time of day. Clark Kent's in love with her, you know, and it's that whole thing. Anything that you've ever seen or watched or read where there's a masquerade ball and the two, one person, they meet each other and then they don't know who they are in regular life, but they know each other in their regular life. You've got Mail, one of the all-time greatest kind of romantic comedies. That's basically identity porn, right? They are writing to each other via, I think it's an AOL chat room, which dates it. and they don't know that they're actually rivals in real life, right?
All right, I see. Well, yes. Hannibal, the entire series, is kind of like identity porn, especially the first season, where Will Graham, you know, becomes friendly with Hannibal, not knowing that he is the Chesapeake Ripper, the serial killer that he's been tasked with taking down. And, I mean, Will's super smart, so he figures it out. But there's a lot of... That's a... kind of messed up identity porn, but
yeah, and it's a lot of it is about how on one level you hate this person, but on a simultaneous level, without realizing it, you love and are obsessed with this person.
And appreciation for sometimes you get the kind of the different things. So with the Batman Superman I've been reading recently, you'll have there was one where Clark was kind of sitting there going, I have like a rage boner for Batman, but also I kind of like dating Bruce, but I'm not quite sure. I can't have both of them. This is a problem. Obviously, the whole problem is resolved when he realizes they are the same person. But you get that kind of, my feelings for different parts of this person are different.
Yeah. Daredevil has a lot of that where like Foggy's not talking to Matt, but he'll have really ragey sex with Daredevil at night. You know, like you get a lot of the separation into two separate people. And even if the fandom doesn't necessarily have that built in, so it doesn't have to just be something that happens in fandoms where people do already have dual identities. You can set up a masquerade ball where these two characters in your fandom hate each other. And then, like in a Sherlock, you could have identity porn where Sherlock takes on a case and he's led by all these clues. And at the end, he finds out that it was John who he's been looking for the whole time. And John's been kind of leading him on about it. Or you could have a fic where Sherlock goes and comments on his blog or something and he doesn't know that it's him and Sherlock's playing at something, you know? So you can set it up in ways too.
I was reading recently, I will repeatedly read a fantastic Man from U.N.C.L.E., Mr. and Mrs. Smith AU.
Ooh.
Where, you know, they're married to each other because for each of them it's a cover. And then they kind of find out who each other is and then destroy the place before having very angry sex, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
And then getting together at the end because, you know, bluff.
Identity porn is one that actual canons tend to love. And they set it up so nicely for fans. So then you actually have dating tropes. So tropes that are related to like the process of finding your one true love, getting your heart broken, having fun when you're young or when you're not so young, and actually dating. So you have, this is where you get didn't know they were dating fix, which again is similar to identity porn. It's when two people are dating but didn't know that they're dating each other, or you know, other characters around the two characters are sending them on all of these dates that the main two characters don't realize are even supposed to be dates, right? And this is where fake dating and pretend relationships kind of really come into play. Where characters have to pretend to go on a series of dates or pretend to be in a relationship with each other, even when they're not. You also have prank dating. So we're going to go on a date, but it's going to be this big joke. Ha ha ha. It's a prank for other people to get them to think that we're dating, but we're not. You have people being set up on blind dates.
Yep.
You have bachelor or bachelorette auctions, where one character purchases another in an auction and then gets roped into having to go on the date with them. Compensated dating, which is kind of like fake dating or pretend relationships, and it's something romantic comedies love to do, where you're basically paying somebody to go on a date with you. Or somebody's paying somebody to go on a date with you. Doppelganger dating, which Friends did very successfully, if anyone remembers the whole Ross-Russ storyline on Friends, where one character, where one character dates a character who's basically a doppelganger of the character that they really want. Dating situations where they start dating and then one character says, I love you, way too quickly, or one of them starts to have real seriousness freakouts about this is getting too serious. The ex who shows back up. So they start dating and then they're fine. And then this other person or third wheel just kind of shows back up and is like, I'm your ex and you loved me once. Which a lot of fans might find obnoxious because even in actual canons, they usually involve putting a blatantly obvious original character in who everybody knows is canon fodder for the main relationship. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we think about any of these kinds of dating tropes that happen in the early stages of a relationship when they're not yet married, but they're past the courtship stage and they're kind of either dating or fake dating?
Fake dating is an absolute fave. Like that pretend relationship, I love. I love that kind of, I need, you know, my family getting on at me to have a relationship and I've got to go, you know, home for Christmas or whatever, please come with me. I will, you know, you will get good food, please come. I have seen it in basically every fandom ever, and it's just wonderful. And what's always an interesting version of that is when the person they're asking to come with them is, so person A is asking person B to come and be their fake friend, fake relationship, and person B is already pining. And it's like, this is going to hurt me so much, but I'm going to do it just so I can say,
I tend to prefer my fake dating AUs when it never occurred to either of them because I love joint obliviousness, right? Like, I just love the idea that here's these two characters and fake dating is great because you can pretty much do it even with the most rare or weird ship. Like, fake dating, you can take two characters who've almost never even interacted in the story before, and you can be like, for some reason, this character who's never interacted with this person gets chosen to be their fake date, right? And you can kind of play with it in a lot of ways that are just really fun.
Yeah, I like, one of my favorite fake dating tropes is when person A wants to piss off other characters by, in, you know, being in a relationship with person B, and they're both jointly in oblivion about it. They're like, oh, this is gonna be funny, like, oh, we're gonna make them so mad, and meanwhile while it's happening, they're like, ooh, this is working out pretty nicely.
Yeah.
And everyone around them is like, and bonus for the other characters not being mad at all and not being surprised by their actual love for each other.
My favorite subset of pretend relationships, though, has to be, we have to go undercover as a couple.
Oh, yeah. Undercover as a couple is wonderful. And that's such a canon thing.
Yep.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, I was reading the TV Tropes page for it, and so many shows have done it.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, it's basically always a het couple or whatever, but my there's actually a separate tag. Like, I had a look on AO3, and there's one that's undercover as a couple, there's one that's undercover as gay. I'm not sure why that deserves a separate mention, but apparently it does, and one that's undercover as married.
Yes.
And they are all separate.
Well, I think that they would be, though, because I think that it's different. What you're pretending to do is different, right? So, like, if you're pretending to be a couple, that might mean that in the fic you're going on dates and everybody who's asking and you're meeting the other person's family maybe for the first time. Undercover as gay would be, like, you either didn't realize that you were gay going in, or you are a straight person, and maybe it's not even a romance thing, but you're undercover pretending to be in love with the same sex, which is, there's issues of internalized homophobia or, like, uncomfortableness with that. And then undercover as married would be a little bit different, because then you're usually living together, or you might have a fake kid, or you have to have the level of intimacy you're pretending to have is totally different, right? Like, the X-Files actually has a pretending to be married episode, like pretending to be a perfect suburban couple episode. And it's adorable, but it's a little bit of a different vibe than fake dating. Right.
Yeah. There's, Chuck used to do it all the time with fake relationships, as a show. Just weirdly for one that was not done as a relationship trope, but the kind of, we have to go live in the suburbs in this house. Normally it's like as a couple, but there's one that comes to mind from the 60s series of The Man from U.N.C.L.E., where these two male agents go and basically live in, it's called like the suburbia affair, I think. And weirdly shippy, yet they clearly couldn't go there because it was the early 60s.
Well, you know, it's funny because, I mean, I talk to Bio, who's done the show sometimes, and she's in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia fandom. And that fandom, actually, the Mac Dennis ship, recently exploded because they actually did an episode called Dennis and Mac Go to the Suburbs. And again, it's two guys, and it explicitly does that thing where they're supposed to be two men living in the suburbs. They're not pretending to be gay. They're not pretending to be anything. They just move to the suburbs. But in their minds, they start pretending almost that they're a gay couple, right? Like, it's about them living there and the impact of being two men living in a suburban house has on them. And it explicitly plays with all of those fake dating, fake marriage ideas of it's just wild. And yeah, like, I've seen that done too, where it's not necessarily a fake couple thing. It's a, we're going to be fake in the suburbs thing.
Yeah.
It's a little weird.
Interesting.
Actually, I have to laugh because I'm not going to wreck it because I haven't read it yet. But but I was looking recently through the Hamilton fics, and I marked for later this one that I absolutely fall in love just with the summary, because the summary says, the only way to get Baron von Steuben to agree to assist in the training of Continental troops is to convince him that Washington shares his inclinations towards pretty young men. Hamilton agrees to play the part of Washington's pretty young man in their ruse, or noted pervert Ben Franklin demands a fake relationship plot diplomacy. I love that summary.
Oh my God. Please send me that link.
I haven't read it yet. I don't know if it's any good, but just that summary alone. The phrase Ben Franklin demands a fake relationship plot, I was just delighted by.
Oh, if it's the one I'm thinking of, like, it sounds like it. It is brilliant.
Is it brilliant? It's really, it looks very smutty too.
It is. Oh, it is.
Yes. Okay. Sign me up, please.
And it's tagged wet and messy, foursome, orgy, and puppy piles. So it's probably that weird combination of, like, fluffy porn.
The best, yes. In my opinion.
Yes.
All right.
I had to bring that up for anyone listening, too, because it just delighted me so much. Fake relationships, when they're done really well, are just, there's something about them that just gets you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No.
So let's talk about domesticity and marriage tropes of, like, once they're over the hurdle where they're married. And let's talk about fake marriage, because, like I said, I think that's a little different one than fake dating.
Yeah, I think fake marriage tends to be a longer duration that they're faking it for. I don't know. And that, you're right, there's a kind of level of casual intimacy there. In the sense that actually, it's, in some ways, it's almost easier to fake if you're really close friends already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you need to be only sort of more casually affectionate. Whereas if you're close friends, then faking that kind of, we're in the first flush of love is actually harder, I suppose. But then the other way around, if you don't really like each other very much, but you're kind of discovering new feelings for each other, then being in the first flush of love kind of maybe easier than being in the very casual, being together for 5 years, whatever.
It's much more intense because you have to be living with the person, right? Mm. And sometimes it goes into that whole forced bed sharing as well. If you have to like appear to everyone who enters your home and you only have one bed. So now you're forced to share a bed, you're forced to share a kitchen and a bathroom, and you're kind of forced to play at something much more intimate than just we are dating. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the domesticity category as well, you get curtain fic. Or it used to be.
See, I didn't know what that was until I saw you mention it, and I kind of went, I looked it up and went, oh, that kind of domestic, we're at the stage of buying curtains with each other, really domestic tasks.
Yeah, it's not used as much anymore, right? Like, it's a term that was once used, and you'll also see it called, like, schmoop, right? Mm. And now, you're more often, you'll hear it called domestic fic or domestic porn, because it's got almost no plot. And it gets irritating, especially when a lot of it gets written about characters who really have no interest in domesticity and canon. It's very hard to make not out of character.
Mm.
But yeah, it's them buying curtains. It's them cooking for each other a nice dinner. It's them Netflix and chilling as a married couple. You know, like it's the most domestic kind of just them being a couple kind of fic, I think, that you can really write. Right? That just revels in that idea of the happy couple. And then you have kid fic, where they have kids.
Yep. Oh, yes.
Yep. We brought that up before in Avengers fandom. It's a thing of super family, where the kid fic is always Peter Parker.
Cute.
Kid fic is something you, I think, have to have the taste for.
I think it depends on the kind of, because there's two major kinds of kid fic. There's the, we are having a child together, or I am having a child, and we get together through this process, or whatever else. And then there's the, this is my friend, who somehow today is now 5. That kind of age regression trope, which is actually one of my absolute favorite tropes of all time.
Yes. Kid fic is a confusing term for people. I feel like the kind that you're talking about more often gets called, like, de-aging.
Yeah, so the AO3 tag is age regression / de-aging.
Yeah.
But it kind of all comes under a kid fic heading often.
Well, because it's fic that has to do with kids, right? Yeah.
And it has to do with some characters interacting with a child.
Yeah. And that's kind of, some terms kind of cross over like that. Like, I had to get corrected when I did my Marvel series, because to me, Super Family always read as the Avengers as a big happy family. But no, it's like a specific thing of Peter Parker being Tony and Steve's son. And kid fic is like that, where when you say kid fic, different fans might tell you a different thing that kid fic is.
Yeah.
But generally, like, when two characters have a kid, I think that qualifies as kid fic. And there is quite a lot of that. There's, and in / it's hard because if you don't want to do mpreg, you're pretty much skipping ahead to they've adopted a kid who's like 5 or 6 at this point.
Yeah, unless you've got some kind of, you know, we were saying earlier about having fandoms that have got some kind of canonical magic or alien science or future science or whatever else, and you can kind of go, here's a magical machine where we both put our DNA in and it makes a child for us.
I do love, though, fics where it's like accidental they get a kid fic, but they're already married. So, like, you already have this domestic curtain fic and it's suddenly there's a basket baby, or, like, suddenly there is a kid of one of the villains, or something happens and they have to watch this kid for a few days, and they're both like, we're going to adopt this kid now, because, you know, like a Daddy Warbucks and Annie kind of a thing, where they're like, oh my god, you're too cute, we can't give you back.
Yeah. I also love the kind of we get together as a result of one of us has ended up accidentally with the other one's child, particularly in that kind of Aliens did it. So I'm looking at you here, Stargate Atlantis fandom, who have the, we stumbled over this alien artifact, we both touched it at the same time, and now either our child has been created in like an artificial womb, or I am somehow, despite being male, now pregnant, and it's your child and I hate you, it's all your fault.
Yeah, there are
and
some.
And then they get together over the process.
There are some fandoms that have like canon, oops, there's accidentally a kid I have, plots. Like Doctor Who with the Doctor's daughter, like he suddenly has a 20-year-old daughter. And like Star Trek has done that, where you have characters who like go to an alternate world where time moves faster, and when they get picked up, they have a 10-year-old kid type of a... those types of plot devices,
and,
right?
And Star Trek does it in other... Star Trek Next Generation made it really painful twice. Yeah. So Next Gen did Troy getting pregnant with little Ian, who kind of ages incredibly far. Like, the whole thing happens over the space of, like, a week, and he goes from being, you know, an embryo through to being a child very, very quickly. And then you've got Data's daughter, well, that's just pain.
No, and they always went for pain with that, because there was also a plot on Deep Space Nine, right, where Keiko and O'Brien's daughter, who you'd seen on the show, you saw them have her, and she was like 5 or 6. Yeah. She accidentally ends up on some alien planet where time moves faster. So their daughter grows up the rest of her life like without them, and then they have to encounter their like adult daughter, and I think it reverses it after. But, like, there's pain in the notion of how quickly their daughter grew up to an adult without them. Like, some canons are just ripe for that. That kind of child angst.
I would be remiss in not bringing up Hannibal here, because they, in the first season, there's a serial killer that they are hunting through the FBI. Will Graham is hunting with the help of Hannibal. And... he's called the Minnesota Strike, and they get him, and they end up killing him, and he leaves behind a teenage daughter that becomes a surrogate sort of daughter for Hannibal and Will. Like, they both help her, you know, post-recovery, and there's so much angst tied to that, and that tag on AO3 is murder family, so.
Yeah, I can imagine. I just watched Stranger Things. And I'm interested to see where that fandom goes, because I imagine that there would just be so much kid fic, like parent-child angst, you know, in that fandom. And then the final one in domesticity that you have is accidental marriage or forced marriage or arranged marriage, basically, which is different than fake marriage, because it's a real marriage. But it's either an AU where arranged marriage is a thing, and so these two characters' families decide to get them together, or it's we're on an alien planet, and the aliens have some weird rule where we now have to be married, even though, you know, that kind of a thing of two people adjusting to each other when they are married, and there's no going back, so it's not like a fake marriage or fake dating. They are married, and now they have to deal with the consequences of being married.
And the very Earth-based version of that is the, oh my god, I just woke up in Vegas and there's a ring on my finger.
Yes. Oh, Vegas marriages are so fun.
So important.
Even though I don't think in real life, I don't think that's actually a thing. Like, I'm pretty sure I remember reading somewhere that in Vegas you cannot, like, get married 5 minutes after with somebody while drunk. Mm-hmm. You do still have to have, like, a day. Do you know what I mean? Between when you... But that's, like, such a trope in so many canons.
Oh, God, yes.
I think canon likes that more world. Than... I think that canon likes that more than fanfiction, though.
Yeah, mostly... Well, I don't know. There's a few places where I've seen it. I've also seen it done where it's, oh my god, have I just woken up married and somebody's done that, like, faked it for them. Mm-hmm. So they think they're married to each other. And it's basically their friend trying to get them together.
Okay, so we're going to talk next about true love and eternal happiness tropes, which are the, like, we're going to be together for 50,000 years, immortality style kind of this is it tropes. And you have time travel fix it. So you have like a time traveler's wife AU, right? Where a character's jumping around through time and it's their relationship with this person is really disjointed through time, or it's meant to be somehow in the time stream. And you have a Groundhog Day AU, right? Where a person wakes up every single day and they have to make this person love them every single day. Or like a 51st dates kind of a scenario. Right? Where they don't remember the person every day. This is where you have reincarnation fix. Right?
Ooh, love them.
And this is kind of where soulmate and soul mark and soul bond AUs fit, where these are fix that are about a deep and abiding eternal for all time love. So these are the fics, for example, in Avengers fandom, where Loki has his chosen person he's with eat Iden's apple if they're human. And it's all about that kind of godly immortality, they're going to make this other person immortal type of love. Or like Twilight fandom, right? This notion that you are literally going to be immortal with this person. And actually, I wanted to tell you guys, there's an Enterprise fic that I wanted to write. And again, we're coming back to Star Trek fandom a lot today, but like Star Trek fandom just has the capability of so many of these tropes. I'm going to write it and I never finished it. But I was going to write a fic, again, because they do a lot of stuff on that show with speeding up and slowing down time. And they've done similar stuff to this, where my chosen ship, which was Trip Tucker and Malcolm Reed, were going to end up on a planet, and they were going to somehow be abandoned on this planet full of, like, plants that seem to eat people. Like, something was going to happen on their away mission. They were going to end up the only two people left on this planet. Everybody's taken off. And they were going to live their entire lives on this planet. They were going to build a little cabin together. They were going to realize that they were the only ones there. They were going to fall in love. They were going to have this entire 60, 70-year life alone together, being this couple, figuring everything out. And then at the end, they were going to die together. And then they were going to wake back up on the ship and be told that there was something toxic in these plants that just made them both joint hallucinate this entire relationship. And I love that kind of thing, when you can somehow write a story about that entire arc of a person's life in this relationship.
Well, there's actually a couple of canon episodes of different series of Star Trek that do something similar.
Yes.
So there is a Voyager episode where Janeway and Chakotay are literally abandoned on a planet because they're infected, or they might be infected, so that's a whole other thing. And they literally set up a little domestic life for themselves.
Yeah.
And they just never quite get there because the show never quite went there. But it is widely considered the most shippy episode. And then there's an episode of Next Generation where Picard literally lives a whole life, and, you know, is I mean, that is one that does make you cry, but it's so brilliantly done. So you kind of get so much of this in canon.
Yeah. And it's a you jump, I jump kind of epic love thing. Like, a lot of the characterizations of, like, the Doctor and the Master in Doctor Who fandom, it's, again, it's that Gallifreyan epic, this is an immortal couple, they have been together thousands of years, kind of a love story.
Oh, yeah.
Or if you were into Avengers fandom, then that's, I don't read it, but I assume that that's kind of the appeal of Thorki, of like Thor and Loki, is you take the brother part of it out, and these are immortal characters, right? And even that aspect of shipping anybody with Loki, the idea that one of them is immortal and one of them is not, is just fascinating.
I read the most, and then you get stuff that kind of inverts that way, especially you saying about where one person's, you know, somehow immortal or has a very long lifespan compared to the other one. Anything involving, like, vampires, usually.
Yeah.
If they don't turn the other person, then... I was reading a Superman, Batman one, where it was, you know, Superman's lived an incredibly long time, and he's finally willing to talk, you know, 300-400 years later at least, about who he loved back when he first became popular. And it's kind of like old and sad, but it's also a kind of, this is still his one true love.
Mm-hmm. See, the well of emotions in these romance tropes are that as we're talking about some of them, I'm getting feels. Like, as we're talking about them, we're talking about fake dating, and I'm remembering all the amazing fake dating AUs I've read, and I'm like, oh, I love that trope so much. And as we're talking about these immortality ones, I'm almost tearing up a little bit, being like, oh my god, I've read so many good ones, and they're so sad, and they're so epic. Oh, I love it.
I just, one of my more recent ships that I started shipping, I just caught up on the last two seasons of Game of Thrones. And I started really shipping the Faceless Man, Jaqen H'ghar, and Arya Stark. And there's a lot of, like, immortality vibes there, because they're supposed to have no identity, not be attached to any one person, so they can always use magic to swap their faces and be these badass deadly assassins. And I read a couple fics about them where they, you know, are, you know, if it's in the future and Arya has become this super you know, badass assassin, and but she always manages to find him. They always manage to find each other, no matter where they are, no matter what face or identity they're assuming. And that gives me a lot of, like, immortal, like, you know, just transcendent Bond feels. And
yeah, it's
I love them.
It's that Titanic, you know, you jump, I jump kind of, like, deep, these two people found each other and they're never going to let each other go, and they have this connection, and you, I feel like you so rarely ever see that in real life. Like, I feel like it's something that people are just drawn to it in stories because, oh my God, don't we all wish, do you know what I mean? That you just,
those are the stories we tell each other in common media narratives anyway, is the kind of, you get to the end of a rom-com or a big romantic movie, you get, very rarely do you get the, oh, and by the way, they're probably going to divorce in about 20 years.
Yeah, but even in a rom-com, I feel like this, what we're talking about now is more the trope of, like, grand romantic dramas. Because, like, a rom-com, it's usually like, oh, they've met, they might live happily ever after, and happily ever after means they might have a couple of kids and then live to old age. But, like, I'm talking about the deep, like, I would die for you, you know, like the Titanic and Gone with the Wind, and you know what I mean? That kind of, like,
all-consuming, epic love.
Yeah, like, epic and all-consuming, and it goes past a human lifespan. Right? It's just beautiful. Alright, so let's talk about some of the issues with this, though, because we've talked about how great it is, and it is, but we did bring up earlier that there are sometimes some problems with kind of this over-focus sometimes in the fanfiction world on romantic tropes, right? And one of them we did bring up was wobification, which... a wobification, for those who don't know, is when you take a character who is in canon kind of edgy or a villain or has rough edges or is problematic and you put them into a curtain fic, right? And suddenly they're very domestic and it's all about their babies and how happy they are and how much they love this person. And that does not work for all characters. And Lexi, why don't you talk a little bit, because, I mean, you're in Kylux fandom, and you're in some fandoms where wobification has probably got to be a little more of an issue.
Yeah, and basically the ultimate issue I've seen people have with it is that it ends up erasing any sort of abusive characteristics that person A and/or usually and person B bring to the relationship. It erases the abusive nature of the relationship between these two canon villains, or one canon villain and one non-villain. And I know it can be hard for people sometimes to separate that, you know, this is, you know, this fanfic, this is just pure fantasy, we're exploring, you know, we're wobifying this character, which, you know, people might, it's an issue because it just completely discounts any characteristics of that person that would make the, you know, relationship abusive or wrong. And, you know, if Kylo Ren and General Hux actually got together as their canon selves, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure it would not be healthy. I'm pretty sure it'd be pretty abusive. So the erasure of, and sort of, I think sometimes it can be read as a brushing off or glossing over of real life abusive relationships and red flags, almost the glorification of red flags in an abusive situation. Like, oh, it's fine. Like, so I can understand why people would take issue with it.
And a lot of the stuff as well, I mean, it's the separation of fantasy and reality, right? Because a lot of the stuff that we just said is amazing about that kind of soul bond fic of, like, you lose yourself in the other person. It's all consuming and it makes everything about this other person, and you meet them and just every problem goes away and love solves everything. I think the problem is that is a fantasy. Right?
It is.
And the worry is that for people who are younger in fandom, or for people who are in relationships in fandom, if this is going to be something that you read a lot of, that it informs how you go looking for love in real life,
Right.
It becomes a problem for people, right? Because you see that story of, like, the old maid who has been looking for love her whole life and she can't be happy unless she has this other all-consuming person. And so I think for some people that's the issue, that it's either... And also the other issue is that sometimes it can portray relationships that are abusive as something you want.
Right. Mm.
So I think for some people, it's this idea that, yes, some people can separate the fantasy from the reality, but, like, it's an acknowledgement that not everybody can, which I personally think is BS, because I personally think that, you know, you can't write something with all of those consequences in mind, right? Like, most people right. should be able to separate things. You can't write for the lowest common denominator of the people who can't.
Exactly. I of course understand why this stuff wouldn't be for everyone and objections that people might have, but that's what tags are for. You don't have to consume any of this media. You don't have to read it. You don't have to look at it. And there can be issues with people policing fandoms and writers and content creators that I just, you know, you don't have to consume this stuff, and it's unfair to ask people to stop creating what they want to create because of whatever reasons. As long as you're able to separate fiction from reality.
Yeah.
And also, you know, blacklist on Tumblr and read the tags, like...
I can understand why it's concerning for some people, right? Because,
of course.
I mean, I read stuff all the time, and I want to eventually do an episode on consent, and we already did kind of talk about this a little bit, but even with consent, I do understand the idea that it's very frustrating when you read a fic about consent and something happens in it that's clearly non-con, but the person who wrote it doesn't clearly think it's non-con. Like,
yeah,
I can understand
that can be as fun.
Yeah, that can be infuriating, right? Because you realize that there's people in the world who don't know, right? And it's the same thing with a lot of the romance fic. When you read something, I mean, Twilight gets a lot of flack for this for the canon, right? Mm-hmm. That when you read something that is supposed to be aspirational, but the aspiration in it is something nobody should really want, really, or that's not attainable in real life, it does become a problem. But you're right. I mean, it's not cool to harass the content creators. And... it's also not cool to kind of police fandom from this perspective of what's safe, right? I mean, it's why we don't limit what movies and TV shows, you know, like, artists are going to tell the story that they're going to tell. I have an issue personally, I think, with whoopification, only because sometimes it just gets to be all that's in a fandom. And if you're a person who's coming for either genfic, right, in romance tropes in general... Yeah. If you're a person who's coming for genfic, or if you're a person who's coming for in-character stuff, a lot of this wobification and curtain fic, it just gets frustrating when it's all there is. So, like, Avengers fic right now, I have a really hard time. I've kind of dropped out of reading. I used to ship Frost Iron, which is Tony and Loki, and I can't anymore. Yeah. Because initially, a lot of it was good in canon, keeping the rough edges, the stuff I liked about Loki. And slowly, it's just become almost all curtain fic. Like, it's... 5 minutes into the fic, Loki's hanging out with the Avengers in his robe and all is forgiven and he's not evil.
Yeah.
Or right. It's become like Loki OC, where it's just vaguely rapey and kind of overly mischaracterizing him, basically.
And it's sort of, it can take the main intrigue and interesting parts and qualities away from the characters and the relationship, if that's all it is. And I mean, it's fine if, you know, people want to read that and write that, but I agree, like, it, I get sick of it after, like, honestly one or two fic, then I'm like, okay,
yeah, and
all right, that's enough of that.
Again, it's not about it not being there, right? And we were talking in Daredevil fandom about this. I was talking with some friends and I said it's early on when Daredevil fandom had lots of stuff going on, so when you could come in on a given day and there was like a couple of domestic piney Matt Foggy fics and a couple of fics about this character and a couple of fics about that character, and there was a variety of writers, it was great. And I would read every single piney Matt Foggy fic and live for them and be like, oh my god, these are great. But when it's all that's there anymore, it just becomes a problem.
I also find there's a thing where you get the kind of, oh, we're going to start with these characters don't get on very well and it's all tensiony, and then plot device happens, and suddenly they shift into that really fluffy, and it's like, well, relationships don't change that quickly. Mm-hmm. If there is something about this person that is irritating, you know, something about person A is irritating person B, just because they've suddenly decided that they find each other attractive does not mean that thing is not still really, really annoying.
Yeah.
Or like the character who could never be a father, who never should be a father because they're really, really just not in that mindset, where they meet this person and then in the next paragraph they suddenly want a kid and all they think about is this person. Like that happens with Tony Stark a lot, where like the minute he hits the relationship stage with any character, all of the rough edges go away because the other character like fixes him. In air quotes.
Oh god, that irritates me no end.
Yeah. So there are issues of that where a lot of stuff starts to get really OOC, especially when these romance characterizations become fanon. Right?
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
When they get taken outside of just the romance fix and they become cemented as the fanon for that character, then they become problematic because suddenly they're everywhere and you can't kind of escape them.
That's true.
And the other thing I wanted to also talk about is how sometimes they really do, and again, this goes into what we were just saying about wolfification, they can cement really cruddy ideas about gender and be really reductive about relationships.
Yeah, and they, I mean, I'm very blunt. I'm very honest about this. It's something that I found, and it's a fault of me, of sort of canon media, as it were. And the media we see in terms of relationships we see on screen, particularly, as well as fan fiction. But until, I mean, probably until I was about, until I went to university, I was about 18, so I really didn't have a grasp of what dating, I mean, so I have never had much of a relationship, so I'm kind of like, I am quite aware that my brain is very still slightly fixated on the, oh, but I'm going to meet this person, they're going to be everything I want, and they're going to be wonderful. Like, my brain, I know that that's not true, that's not how it works. But, you know, in all the media I consume, it's, but it's so easy, and then we meet, and then we fall in love, and I instantly want to kiss that person. And I'm like, I don't think it works like that.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff that it's kind of idealizing is also somewhat just problematic stuff. Right? Like, it's reinforcing more rigid gender roles in terms of who's doing what sometimes in these relationships. It's kind of making having a kid the ultimate goal of domestic life, or it's making certain things the goal, right? Like, how often do you see a fic where two characters just choose not to get married? Right? Like, they're in a relationship and everyone's bugging them about it and they say, hey, back off, or they don't want a kid. Like, it's kind of cementing a particular path of romance in a lot of respects, and it's kind of gendering two men sometimes into the stereotypical male and female roles.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when they do have children.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I think it also erases, again, this is one thing we've talked about at length on the show before, but when there are existing female love interests in canon, all of these tropes that we talked about, they are either completely erased, killed off or something, or they become like, and I'm going to use a term here I might get some flack for, but they become like the fag hag. Right? Like, they become like the girl best friend or the guy best friend who like falls into that role of hooking the two characters up. So
occasionally you get the kind of, well, I was seeing that person, but as it turns out, she's an absolute bitch. And it's like, well, actually, no, she's not. She's okay. It's okay for relationships to just not work.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It tends to be the fault of the female love interest.
Or it tends to be not respectful of the female love interest, or not respectful of the other, even not the female love interest, but just the friends that that other character has, you know, the interest that they have as a character when you see them. So like the example for Tony Stark is that, first off, I don't think he's a character who needs to be quote unquote fixed, but fix always go that way. With Pepper, it tends to have either, it tends to basically use her as a way to trigger Tony's self-loathing. Right?
Yeah.
So she dumps him for perfectly logical reasons similar to the ones you see in canon, where she just can't take his BS anymore. And then she completely disappears. And, like, Cannon just did this in Civil War, right? Like, she decides they're done and she's gone. And I kind of resented that because in the first movie, like, she is one of his best friends. You know, I don't see a scenario where she's just done. She might be done for a while and then come back and just need the time. Do you know what I mean? But I don't see a scenario where she, A, gets that frustrated that quickly. So you have to show me the thing that gets them to that point. Or yeah, she needs to be there in some respect, influencing him, right? Mm. And that's one thing Civil War at least did do, is that you could see how her lack of being there was influencing his behavior. And the same thing with Rhodey. Like, there are so many Steve Coney fics where Rhodey's not even in them, or Happy's not even in them. And it's like you're erasing every other important relationship these characters have, which, again, knowing people in real life who have met a person and immediately, like, started only being interested in things that other person is interested in and losing all of their own hobbies, or started not talking to all of their old friends because they're so wrapped up in this person. There are a lot of problematic aspects to how all this romance fic portrays relationships, right? In the same way that we now pick apart romantic comedies, right, for how they portray women and how they influence people's ideas of romance, I think it's fair that fan fiction should be fair game for those same criticisms. So we did bring some fic recs, though. So getting off the topic of badness, we love romance fic. We said that. We do have some fic recs.
We did.
Yay. So we'll start with you, Tia. Which fic did you bring to rec for us today?
So I brought a fic that actually kind of inverts a trope. So it's called We'll Show the Fire How to Burn by Vivrella. And it's from the Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie. And actually, I read it because it was a soulmate identifying mark, even though it wasn't my normal ship in that fandom. And the basic concept is what happens when you choose, even if you're not each other's soulmate.
And I was going to find one fic rec, and she might have been wrecked on the show before, but there is a writer in Daredevil fandom called Poison Ivory. And she's one of the most kudos writers in the fandom. And I went to find one. But the thing is, all Poison Ivory writes is these beautiful romance trope fics that are all long fics. And they're just beautiful. And so I don't want to wreck just one. I want to tell people to check out Poison Ivory because, she wrote this amazing fake marriage fic where Matt and Foggy they marry because they don't want Foggy to be forced to testify against Daredevil. And she wrote this really self-indulgent boy band AU where Foggy was a boy band singer who Matt listened to as a kid. And I am going to wreck one, though. I'm going to wreck one that called Independent Study. I would advise you to check out her whole author work if you like Daredevil fic, though. It's crazy good. But Independent Study, the summary on it is, Matt doesn't have a problem with his new roommate being bi until Foggy starts bringing boys home. And it's a college fic, and it features Matt thinking that what's happening is internalized homophobia because he identifies as straight. And he thinks, oh, I'm having all these issues with Foggy dating boys, and it's got to be because I'm a homophobe. And he slowly realizes that, no, it's just jealousy because he wants Foggy. And he's also more bi than he thought. It's beautiful. It is 9,000 plus words. All of Poison Ivory's stuff is nice and long. So that would be my rec today. But yeah, so do we have any final thoughts then on romance tropes? Tia, we'll start with you.
They're always going to be my go-to, unless I'm looking for something really hot. If I'm in the mood for fic, I'm nearly always in the mood for something that makes me have happy feels at the end of it. And I have favourites that I will filter by on Archive of Our Own, because particularly when they're done well, they are just so enjoyable to read, and it makes my heart swell.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, romance fic is one of those things where if you're in the mood to feel warm and fluffy and you just want some comfort food at the end of the day, they can just be fantastic. So that is our show. Thanks again to Tia and Lexi. And thanks to you, as always, for listening. I really do mean it. I know that sometimes our episodes are delayed or I get overwhelmed and am unable to always put out episodes very quickly, but I do appreciate the support of everyone who loves the show, who comments on the forum, follows us on Tumblr, tells their friends about us. The listener base just keeps growing, which blows my mind, and I know that it's just because all of our listeners are doing the good work of going out and spreading the word. So thank you so much. It's what keeps me here. It's why I'm still doing this. So thank you again. If you liked what you heard, you can check out our website and Tumblr at theotpodcast.com. They are one and the same. You can also join us on Twitter, where we are at theotpodcast. As I mentioned, we also have a forum where you can discuss all the things we brought up in this episode, past episodes. You can interact with the contributors. They all kind of check the forum for episodes that they're in. So please check that out. It is linked on the website. Thanks always to Peter Chakowski for our theme song and our logo. He writes an adorable webcomic. He puts out albums as well as Rock Paper Cynic. You can find his tunes on Spotify actually now, so please go check them out. His album Bork and Telephone is really fantastic. And finally, your kink is not my kink, and that's okay. Or in this case, your schmoopy romantic trope is not mine, and that's okay.